Blog Talk Radio.
Skyrocketing healthcare and insurance costs. Extremely modest gains against chronic disease. Thousands die yearly due to drug reactions. What can be done? Thomas Edison is quoted as declaring, "The doctor of the future will give no medicine, but interest his patients in diet and nutrition, exercise, and the care of the human frame. He will teach them about the cause of all disease. The doctors of the future are here." Welcome to Blue Zone Wellness with your host, Keith Henry, ND, one of the doctors of the future.
Hi, welcome to Blue Zone Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry, broadcasting from right outside of Orlando, Florida on this 30th day of June, 2013. Thank you for joining me, wherever you might be located in the world. Welcome to all of my good friends over in Costa Rica, as well as over here in the U.S., and Trinidad, and wherever else you may be listening. I'd like to thank you for joining me here. It's not a beautiful day as it normally is here. Today is rainy and cloudy, but still a good day to be alive. And I'd like to thank you for listening. Again, we have a very interesting show. I'd like to remind you, if you'd like to call in with a question or a comment, you can do so at 917-889-2207. That is 917-889-2207. Again, I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry, on Use Your Own Wellness. And we have a very interesting show for you today. Of course, we're going to follow our normal outline. We start off with the Week in Natural News Review, and then we go over to our Healing Food section, and then we close it out with a Healing Supplement or Healing Herb. And we're going to cover all three of those areas today. As usual, if you haven't listened in before, we start off by dealing with our Week in Natural News Review section, where we review some items that came out with respect to health and natural news this week. Or sometimes we deal with things that are not necessarily specifically natural health, but we address them and analyze them from a natural health perspective. Now, again, if you would like to follow me, send me a friend request, you can do so on Facebook at just facebook.com/naturedoc. You can visit my blog for loads and loads of natural health information. That's Phase 3 Ministries, PHASE, 3 Ministries, MINISTRIES.com. And then the blog is /WordPress. And thank you for listening again today. We're going to go ahead and get started with our first article. It's also, if you're listening and you want to go on the blog, the chat room, we're here on Blog Talk Radio, which is the platform that we use to broadcast the show. So again, you can go to Next Level Wellness there. Just look us up at Blog Talk Radio if you're listening there, and you can go to our chat room. We're going to start off with the first article that came out, and usually we'll go to a break at this point, but we'll go to a break a little deeper into this first segment. But we're going to go ahead and we're going to get started. The first article was actually entitled, "Study Says Vitamin D Improves Health of Female Type 2 Diabetics 3 Ways." And it's from Yahoo.com. We're going to talk about how vitamin D is beneficial for diabetics and for females that are diabetic, rather. The article started off by saying there was a Chicago pilot project found study. It found that vitamin D improves the health of women with type 2 diabetes in several different ways. The researchers, according to this article, conducted this study or this pilot program, and they received money to expand the study to follow a larger number of patients after they found their initial success. And the study was conducted from the Loyola University School in Chicago, Nehal School of Nursing. And they found that among female type 2 diabetics with symptoms of depression, taking supplements of vitamin D, it resulted in significant drops in their blood pressure. Also, it caused an elevation of their overall mood. It caused modest weight loss. All of these things, and this was reported at ScienceDaily.com. And they presented their findings at the American Diabetics Association 73rd Scientific Sessions. So you've heard me talk, if you've listened here before, if you listen frequently, you've heard me talk frequently about vitamin D, and especially vitamin D3. In fact, of all of the shows that we've done here, and as well when we were broadcasting at the Big 810 AM, The show on vitamin D here especially is the most listened to show in the history of our broadcast here on Blog Talk Radio. It has more listens than any other, thousands. And so it's a very popular show and a popular supplement, is vitamin D3. And you know that I've recommended that you use vitamin D3, which is the superior if you're going to use a supplement, but even more superior to the liquid supplement is the sunshine. The issue is once you become depleted, a lot of times it becomes necessary to take also the supplement to bring your vitamin D blood serum levels up, and then you can at least stay in the sunshine and get sufficient amounts from the sunshine. But if you get sufficient amounts from the sunshine all along, this can prevent you going into a situation where you are deficient. And because the foods have been so severely depleted, many times we find ourselves deficient simply because the food, or even if we eat a varied diet, many times the foods are so depleted and stripped of the nutrients that we are not getting the nutrients that we need. Now, also, in this, we're still dealing with this first article. Again, this article was published, it came out this week, and it was from Yahoo. And the article goes on to say that the pilot study followed 46 women who averaged at about an age of about 55. And they had suffered from diabetes on an average of 8 years, and they showed insufficient vitamin D levels, about 18 nanograms per milliliter. And it took 56 months. So basically, they took 8 years, and they all show insufficient levels of vitamin D. Again, 18 nanograms per milliliter of blood. And over the period of 6 months, they took 50,000 international units of vitamin D a week. And at that point, the article says the vitamin D levels in their blood had climbed into the sufficient range, being an average of 38 nanograms per milliliter of blood. Their moves, again, as I mentioned earlier, were elevated. Scores on initial depression survey moved from 26.8 to 12.2 at the half-year mark, indicating a significant drop in symptoms. So by taking vitamin D alone, and because the study didn't indicate that they did anything else particularly, by taking vitamin D, their depression dropped from 26.8 to 12.2, which is a significant drop. And this is only taking 50,000 international units per week. I would have given, well, I know this is their study, but if I was helping someone with this particular issue, I probably would have been given 25 or 30,000 international units a day, at least for a short amount of time. They were able to, they were taking 50,000 international units a week over the course of 6 months. So I'm sure if they had increased the levels, at least for a shorter period of time, they would have gotten probably greater benefit. If not greater benefit, they would have gotten benefit much quicker. The article went on to say further that the average blood pressure reading fell from 140.4 milliliters for the higher number to 132.5, which an average, and the average weight dropped from 226.1 to 223. So they lost an average of about 3 pounds, which is not a lot over a 6 month period. And not only that, though, that they had an average drop of about 8 points in their blood pressure. The article goes on to say that the National Diabetes Information Clearinghouse reports that diabetes affects 8.3% of the U.S. population, or about 25.8 million individuals. And of these individuals, an estimated 7 million of them remain undiagnosed, which is significant. So we're dealing with an epidemic. 25.8 million individuals in this country are said to have diabetes, and about roughly just over 7 million of them are undiagnosed. And the article goes on to say further, the type 2 diabetes, once known as insulin-dependent diabetes mellitus, typically starts as insulin resistance, and we've talked about that on here before. We talked about how you start off being insulin resistant, and then being pre-diabetic, and then going from pre-diabetes to full-blown from being pre-diabetic rather to being a full-blown diabetic. Again, just to let you know, you're listening to U Zone Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. We're in our first segment where we deal with the Week in Natural News Review. If you'd like to call in with a question or a comment, you can do so at 917-889-2207. That's 917-889-2207. Now, we're going to continue with this article. The article went on to point out further, and again, the name of this article is entitled, Study Says Vitamin D Improves Health of Female Type 2 Diabetics in Three Ways. The article went on to say further that the vitamin D has an important role in calcium absorption. It's very important. We've talked about that as well, is that there's a synergistic relationship between vitamin D and calcium. And vitamin D is necessary for you to be able to absorb calcium. And so if you look at this from a long-term perspective, especially if you're a female, women tend to get into a situation where they're deficient in calcium and they get into a situation where they have osteoporosis later in life, which is probably can be connected with one of the main issues is probably a deficiency over years of vitamin D. And so because they're not absorbing the vitamin D, or rather they're not absorbing the calcium because they don't have sufficient amounts of vitamin D. So again, vitamin D is very important. And as I've said, vitamin D3 is extremely important. And this vitamin D3 from the sunshine is even more important than the supplement. The article went on to point out further that the Chicago researchers acknowledge that they need to conduct larger randomized trials to figure out exactly how vitamin D supplements impact depression and the major cardiovascular risk factors common to type 2 female diabetics. The article went on to say, have received a $1.49 million grant from the National Institute of Nursing Research at the National Institutes of Health for a follow-on study. They expect to enroll 180 women with type 2 diabetes evidence of depression, says the article, and subpar vitamin D levels in the four-year research project. And the subjects will randomly receive either 50,000 international units of vitamin D each week or a weekly placebo for 6 months. If this proves useful, it would be an easy, cost-effective treatment with relatively few side effects. And we already know that in the natural health field. We already know that vitamin D is effective. It's effective for cancer. It's effective for depression. It's effective for diabetes. So we don't need a $1.4 million study. There's anything wrong with that per se, but they can simply come over to us and ask us what we've been doing. Now, we know that they're going to say, well, you haven't done any double-blind studies and this and the other, but the fact of the matter is, not everything needs a double-blind study. When we can see these things operating in the real world and we can see a client after client or patient after patient getting the same or similar results. And again, there is a place for double-blind studies. I'm not degrading them, but many times, as we've talked about on here before, the double-blind studies is a standard that's used for chemical drugs. And because herbal remedies and herbal medication and vitamin D's and vitamin A's and different supplements do not necessarily work in the same fashion as some of these drugs. Not only that, the problem gets there's a problem with people, especially pharmaceutical companies, trying to undermine certain studies and making up studies and introducing false information. And not even outsourcing studies to a third-party independent company, but doing them themselves. And if the studies do not come out what they expected them or how they expected them to come out, then they bury them. They never support them. They never publish them. And so there's a lot of other things that come into these studies. They have their role, but they have to be looked upon in the context of the big picture. Again, you're listening to U Zone Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and finish out our first segment here, the Week in Natural News Review. When we get back, we're going to be talking about why exactly the American Dental Association is so upset with Dr. Oz. And they're really not happy with him. And you can be sure that it's something that he said or done or exposed, whatever word you would like to use, that has caused them to be a little up in a roar. We'll be back after this quick break. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. You're listening to U Zone Wellness.
Do you know anyone that has health issues? Of course you do. Have you noticed the rise in popularity of natural therapies and alternative medicine? Sure you have. Have you ever wondered if alternative therapies work or if it's just all quackery? Then you need to visit the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog at phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Keith Henry, ND, is trained in natural naturopathy and provides amazing insight at the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog that he has gained from years of hands-on experience. Check it out after this show at phase3ministries.com/WordPress.
You are listening to Blue Zone Wellness with Dr. Keith Henry on BlueZoneWellness.org. Be sure to join us here every week at the same time. You can also listen at blogtalkradio.com/BlueZoneWellness. There you can also download the app and listen to the archive versions on your smartphone. So from Blue Zone Wellness, here's to your health.
Welcome back to Blue Zone Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. Thank you for listening, wherever you may be listening. Also, if you'd like to remind you, if you would like to call in with a question or comment, you can do so at 917-889-2207. If you don't necessarily want to call in and talk, you can go to Blue Zone Wellness, or rather Blog Talk Radio, the Next Level Wellness. Just look up Next Level Wellness on Blog Talk Radio. And you can come to our page here. If you're not listening, you can simply go in the chat room and post your question, and I'll see if I can answer it for you on air if possible. Anyway, let's move on to our next article. We're in the Week in Natural News Review segment. And in this article, we are going to be looking at why the American Dental Association is so uptight and bent out of shape with Dr. Oz. And this particular article was taken from Mercola.com, Dr. Mercola. He did a brief story on why the ADA is uptight with Dr. Oz at his website. And Dr. Mercola says, on March 28th, the Dr. Oz show featured a segment entitled, Are Your Silver Fillings Making You Sick? And again, this article came out on the 25th of this month, about 5 days ago. And Dr. Mercola says that in this show, in this segment entitled, Are Your Silver Fillings Making You Sick?, the program explained the toxic health problems linked to mercury fillings and even measured the mercury released from the fillings when brushing the teeth of a model mouth. The segment, he goes on to say, is evidence that the momentum toward mercury-free dentistry is gaining speed, and as the facts about their risk are becoming more widely accepted, even by mainstream media sensations like Dr. Oz, the ADA seems to apparently have a problem with it. Dr. Mercola says further in his article, he says, yet despite the evidence, the American Dental Association has remained a staunch advocate for dental amalgams or silver or mercury-based fillings, refusing to acknowledge any inherent problems and risks associated with dental mercury, he says. He says further, and now they're even severing ties with those who dare to speak out against this scientifically proven threat, namely, in this particular case, Dr. Oz. Dr. Mercola goes on to say further in this article, he says, the same day the Dr. Oz segment aired, the American Dental Association, the ADA, released a statement making it clear that they objected to the program as well as its message. He says, weeks later, they announced they had ended their affiliation with ShareCare, which is a consumer website co-founded by Dr. Oz. Reportedly, he says, quote, the decision was made after a March 28th episode of the Dr. Oz show provided misleading information on dental amalgam. According to an ADA news release, the segment erroneously portrays, according to the ADA, dental amalgams as a health risk, when in fact not one credible scientific study supports this position, is the position of the American Dental Association. Now, Dr. Mercola goes on to say further in this article, according to an ADA news release, the segment erroneously portrays dental amalgams as a health risk, while no evidence exists, or rather no credible scientific study exists that supports this position. And then Dr. Mercola points out, he says, however, researchers from the University of Illinois at Chicago School of Public Health recently concluded that mercury alternatives are actually less hazardous to both public health and the environment when comparing mercury-based dental fillings with alternatives like resin composites and glass ionomer fillings. They reported, and when he's referring to they, he's talking about researchers from the University of Illinois at Chicago School of Public Health. They reported, quote, based on current evidence, the ultimate goal of a phase-out of virtually all usage of dental mercury is recommended. Dr. Mercola in this particular article goes on to say further that the 47 nations of the Council of Europe also passed a resolution calling on the nations to start restricting or prohibiting the use of these fillings, explaining that amalgams are the prime source of exposure to mercury for developed countries, also affecting embryos, fetuses through the placenta, and children through breastfeeding. So here we have significant evidence, notwithstanding what the American Dental Association is saying. You have a major university there out of Chicago, based upon their studies, recommending the phasing out of these of this mercury. You have other significant, or rather credible, sources like the 47 nations of the Council of Europe passing a resolution calling on nations to start restricting or prohibiting the use of these of this mercury and these dental fillings. And the ADA is saying, on the other hand, no, that Dr. Oz is presenting, allowed to be presented, and presenting false and misleading information. So much so that they begin to sever ties with one of his websites. Now, Dr. Mercola goes on to say further in his article, he says, though the ADA or American Dental Association won't admit that mercury is a biological poison at any dose, is not the best material to be implanted in your body, other health organizations are facing the facts. The World Health Organization, he says, for example, also released its final report on dental amalgams, and he says, and took a stance against the use of mercury in dentistry, urging a switch in the use of dental materials away from these mercury-based materials. The report even included mention of the known toxic effects of mercury exposure. And then he cites this report saying, quote, this is from the World Health Organization, and Dr. Mercola is quoting their report, and they say, quote, mercury is highly toxic and harmful to health. Approximately 80% of inhaled mercury vapor is absorbed in the blood through the lungs, causing damage to lungs, kidneys, and the nervous, digestive, respiratory, and immune system. Health effects from excessive mercury exposure include tremors, impaired vision and hearing, paralysis, insomnia, emotional instability, developmental deficits during fetal development, and attention deficit and developmental delays during childhood. So here we have it again. It's not just one organization or one study somewhere in some back room, but these studies are becoming more and more significant. They're becoming more and more frequent. And so for the American Dental Association to hold fast to such a position when things should be changing should be somewhat concerning. Dr. Mercola goes on to say further in this particular article, the problems with mercury fillings are twofold. He says, first, virtually any kind of stimulation can cause these fillings to release mercury, or stimulation, rather, can cause these fillings to release mercury. Eating, drinking, brushing your teeth, grinding your teeth, chewing gum, anything. He says, if you want to see the vapors released for yourself, he has a video on this site in this particular article, which is similar to the demonstration shown on the Dr. Oz show, and I'm going to put a link to this article right now up at the in the chat room. So if you come on Blog Talk Radio and find us there, you'll see that I just posted a link if you want to read the article yourself and scroll down and watch the video where you can actually see the vapors that he's referring to here. He goes on to say, mercury vapor from the amalgams passes readily through cell membranes across the blood-brain barrier and into your central nervous system, where it causes immunological, neurological, and even psychological problems. Children and fetuses whose brains are still developing are most at risk, but really anyone can be impacted, he says. And then he asked the question, when is the ADA, the American Dental Association, going to face the facts? He said that the world rallies around the obvious necessity of replacing mercury-based products with non-toxic alternative, the ADA continues to shill for mercury fillings. Heedless of dentist members who have rejected these fillings and aware that taxpayers must pay the price of the pollution caused by pro-mercury dentists. He says, perhaps their staunch opposition, even as facts are now impossible to deny, has to do with their massive conflicts of interest. Then he points out that the American Dental Association is a former patent holder of these fillings and has helped draft woefully misled policy statements affirming that dental amalgams are safe, and not only that they do not contribute to environmental their effect upon the environment is rather minimal. He says the ADA has also historically covered up the fact that the term silver filling is actually profoundly deceptive, as the composite material contains anywhere from 49 to 54% mercury. Thus should be called mercury fillings, not the euphemistic and deceptive term silver filling. At one time, they even declared that removing mercury fillings is unethical, and many dentists lost their license for removing them, which is pretty remarkable, if you ask me, where you have mercury, you're putting mercury in people's mouths. And even there are other areas of society that have gotten away from mercury and other industries, and they're still holding fast to the fact, or to their opinion, rather, that you should continue to put mercury in the mouths of people, notwithstanding how it can affect, has been shown to be a poison. And to put it not only in their mouths, which is in their head, essentially, it's almost common sense that once you begin to see the problems, and once you begin to see something that's toxic and poison, once that's been identified at any level, and you're going to put it in someone's head, which is closest to their brain, it's almost criminal to hold fast to the position that there's no problem. Dr. Mercola continues in this particular article, and he says, what is clear is that the ADA is not going to go down without a fight, and to them that means attacking anyone who dares to speak the truth about these fillings. And he says that Dr. Oz is only their latest, quote, victim. Already, he says, the ADA aided and abetted dental boards to yank licenses from dentists who truthfully told patients that these fillings are mainly mercury and who advised against their use. He says this was despite the known fact that dental amalgams emits mercury vapor after it is implanted in your mouth, and this mercury, he says, bioaccumulates in the tissues of your body, endangering your health in too many ways to count. He goes on to say that the ADA, or American Dental Association, will undoubtedly continue to crusade to keep these fillings in your mouth, which is a primitive, polluting product. He says, he goes on to say in his article that in the 21st century, with all the other products that are sold in the United States, with the safer alternatives, he says we should really be moving to these products. And actually, there are some dentists that are. They're called holistic dentists. And I would highly recommend that if you have these, and if you can afford it, you could begin to go to a dentist that understands how to remove them and replace them with healthier alternative to replace those fillings. In fact, people who have multiple sclerosis would tend to have a significant amount of mercury in their system, which is interesting. Let me finish up here with the last part of this particular article. Dr. Mercola says, Dr. Oz helped expose the truth about mercury fillings, proving he would not be beholden to industry-friendly bullies like the ADA. And he says, now it's your turn. He recommends, again, if you go to that article link in the chat room there, or you just look up on, do a search on Google for ADA in relationship with Dr. Oz website. You'll probably be able to find an article that way too. In the event that if you happen to be listening later on to a archive, this in the archive, or listen to this broadcast on demand once the live broadcast is over, you will be able to find it. Again, we're going to move on to our next segment now. Our next segment is the healing food segment. And in the healing food segment, we talk about foods, a particular fruit or a vegetable or a nut or a series of foods or a particular way to eat that is beneficial to your health. Because your food should be your medicine, and your medicine should essentially be your food. And so what we're going to talk about here today, we're going to talk about the benefits of a vegetarian diet, the scientific benefits, not all of them, just in general. And you've heard me talk about our diet should be in harmony with the colors of the rainbow. red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet. And it should two things. It should be in harmony with the colors of the rainbow. And it also should be as close to the garden as possible. Those are the two elements that we should look for, the two main elements that we should look for. And so let's look at some of the benefits of a vegan diet. And you know that I believe, as I talk on this show, on this broadcast all the time, about those laws of health. And those eight laws of health being trust in the Creator, sunshine, exercise, water, air, rest, diet, and self-control. Those are the broad principles. And then you have sub-principles which come under each of those broad principles. And this vegetarian vegan diet, plant-based diet, not even vegetarian really, but more of a plant-based vegan diet, falls under the heading of your eight laws of health of diet. Again, trust in the Creator, sunshine, exercise, water, air, rest, diet, and self-control or temperance. And so as a subheading, we will be looking at diet as we talk about this. Now, it's interesting when, you know, there's a lot of controversy, even amongst natural practitioners. Most natural practitioners, there's a growing number of them, but many prominent ones don't even recommend a plant-based diet. But if you look at, we're just going to look at a little bit of the benefits, the known benefits of a plant-based diet. You know, by first of all, if you minimize processed foods and emphasize have a program that minimizes processed food and actually emphasizes whole plant-based foods, a vegetarian or vegan can actually enjoy a very nice fare of food. Not only that, but they can also be protected from a range of the major diseases. And so let's look at some of them. First of all, when you eat a plant-based diet, you have far less issues with your weight, because the high water content and fiber in plant-based foods is there to help with the weight. And so in other words, overweight people typically lose about 10% of their body weight when they switch to a vegetarian diet. And then the body mass index, or the BMI, of vegetarians is generally lower as well. So vegetarian diets have less saturated fat, and they're actually likely to contain less fat overall. And I know this from personal experience. When I see someone and we develop a program for them, and especially if they have any type of sickness, but I'm going to typically always recommend a plant-based diet. And one of the side effects of a plant-based diet, especially when you combine it with exercise, there's two of those laws of health that we talk about. One of those side effects is going to always be weight loss, many times significant weight loss. In fact, like I said earlier, on average, people who are overweight would typically lose 10% of their body weight when they switch to just a vegetarian diet. Another benefit of going to a plant-based diet is fiber, because the indigestible matter that gives structure to plants and foods is essential for speeding waste out of your body, out of your colon. Virtually all whole plant foods have a positive impact on your digestion. For instance, animal foods, on the other hand, contain no fiber, and they move sluggishly through your system, through your entire gastrointestinal tract, and this results in many times in constipation and putrefaction of the meat in your digestive tract. In other words, that's a nice way of saying that it rots. And when it rots, it turns acid. It contributes to your pH balance being thrown into an acid atmosphere, which will essentially over time lead to inflammation and usually sickness. It will contribute to the likelihood that you will be constipated, which will also increase the likelihood that you will end up sick from some type of disease of abnormality, where when you have that fiber, that undigestible fiber that's responsible for the structure of these fruits and vegetables, it helps flush that bad bacteria out of your colon, out of your gastrointestinal tract, out of your intestines as a whole. And therefore, you're going to have better digestion. You're going to have more frequent calls to the restroom, and you're going to feel better. You'll be surprised at how many times when we put people on a cleansing program, how within days they say, oh, I feel so much lighter. I feel less sluggish. And this, again, is one of the benefits of that plant-based diet. Another benefit of a plant-based diet is you will have a healthier heart. Again, this is another one of the benefits of the fiber. because the fiber in the fruits and vegetables actually help to reduce the cholesterol. For instance, one type of soluble fiber actually pulls cholesterol out of your body. And so those vegetarian vegans, I'm primarily, when I say vegetarians here, I'm primarily really talking about vegans who are on a totally plant-based diet. And even vegetarians are healthier, just like a scale. You have those meat eaters typically are the least healthy, those who eat meat and dairy products. And then those you have the lacto-ovo vegetarians who just eat, they don't eat any flesh. Now, this idea that fish is not flesh is the erroneous idea. Fish is flesh. It has a face. So you have many people now calling themselves vegetarians, but they say, well, I'm a vegetarian, but I just eat fish. No, you're not a vegetarian. You are a flesh eater because you're eating the flesh of a dead animal, be it a fish or a chicken. So, again, let's not get confused with that. And the studies show that those who eat chicken, fish, beef, anything, they tend to have more diseases and a shorter lifespan. Those who eat just fish and chicken, they have a little bit better health. Those who only eat dairy products, they have better health than those who eat all plant-based have the best health. So this is just overall in general. Now, of course, we're not saying that if you are a plant, you eat a plant-based diet, you're vegan, but you're eating other things, large amounts of sugar, if you're not exercising, if you're stressing out, of course, those can be factored in. But all things equal or similar even, you're going to have far better health and be far more fit as having a plant-based diet, as what they call a vegan. If you're just a vegetarian, you're going to have better health than those who eat flesh of any kind. Again, you will have a healthier heart. Again, as I said earlier, you have one type of soluble fiber that actually pulls cholesterol out of your body. And not only that, plant-based foods don't contain cholesterol. So usually when people come and say, my cholesterol is high, one of the first things they ask is, are you eating flesh? Are you eating cholesterol? Because you're not getting any cholesterol if you're eating greens and tomatoes and apples and oranges. If you're not eating animal flesh, you're not getting cholesterol. The only cholesterol you're going to have is the natural cholesterol that's made by your liver, which is the beneficial cholesterol. So again, if you have high cholesterol and you're eating flesh, you're eating cholesterol. And so if you're eating a plant-based diet, you're not eating this bad cholesterol. And so, but in vegetarians, their cholesterol levels are typically 40 points lower than those who eat flesh. Not only that, blood pressure is also lower overall, suggesting that vegetarians have a 20 to 40% reduced risk of heart disease and a 30 to 60% reduced risk of stroke just by following a plant-based diet. Again, it's interesting when we look at, we've talked about before, having trust in the Creator, which is another one of those health laws. But if you have trust in the Creator, if you look back in the book of Genesis, the original diet, the perfect diet that was originally given to man for optimal health was a plant-based diet. So it's interesting when you think about it, one of those laws of health is the trust in the Creator. And so we have to trust, no matter what anyone else says, that this is the optimal diet. In fact, there was an analysis of five studies. They concluded that vegetarians have a 34% reduced rate of dying from a heart attack compared to those who eat flesh. Another benefit of the plant-based diet is that you actually slow down your aging. High antioxidant content the high antioxidant content that's contained in many plant-based foods like berries actually combat the cellular damage caused by the unstable oxygen molecules known as free radicals. We've talked about those free radicals that they get loose and they cause havoc. Now, these free radicals, which are ingested from cooked foods and polluted air, etc., are one of the main causes that we experience aging. But a diet high in whole and fresh foods, plant-based foods, can actually slow down these events, this aging. So again, a plant-based diet, just review it very quickly, it helps, the studies show, both clinical studies as well as scientific studies show that a plant-based diet will increase the likelihood that you will lose weight, will make it a lot easier, almost effortlessly. you'll lose weight. You will have better digestion because of the fiber. You will have lower cholesterol because you're not eating cholesterol and animal products. Not only that, you would do less damage to your heart, and you decrease the likelihood that you would suffer a heart attack or a stroke. You decrease the likelihood that you would suffer a heart attack just by going on a plant-based diet from between 30 and 60%. You increase the likelihood, or rather decrease the likelihood that you will have a stroke by about 34% over a person who actually does eat flesh. You will slow your aging significantly because you cut back by eating the fruits and vegetables that are high antioxidants. These antioxidants offset the damage that's done by free radicals. So here you have, again, those are just one, two, three, four things that you can do, some of the benefits, rather, by eating a plant-based diet. Another benefit of a plant-based diet is that you reduce your risk of cancer. You reduce the likelihood that you will have cancer. So in other words, several studies show that vegetarians have a 40% reduced risk of getting cancer. And again, that's very significant. Not only that, there are several explanations, some of the scientists say, for the statistics, because vegetarians tend to be thinner. And obesity actually is one of the particular indications that you will have an increased risk of cancer. And so if you are eating a plant-based diet, if you're eating a plant-based diet, just scientifically speaking, clinical practice will show over and over and over again that you will actually be, in general, it'll be easier for you to lose weight. You will have better overall digestion. The likelihood that you would die from a heart attack is greatly decreased. The likelihood that you would die from a stroke is greatly decreased. Your aging will be slowed down. The likelihood that you will look younger, longer, essentially, you will reduce your risk of cancer. Not only that, the high fiber content of plant-based foods, and when it comes to cancer, actually help speed waste through your system. Because remember, when that waste remains in your system, it will contribute to inflammation. And as I said before, inflammation is always a marker for cancer and for diabetes and for a number of other diseases that will actually cause disease or sickness. Now, again, you're listening to Use Zone Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. We are going to, we were just talking about the benefits of eating a plant-based diet, and we're actually in our segment where we talk about healing foods. And because of our time, we were going to deal a little bit with walnut. I've talked about walnuts before, but we'll go into more detail with walnuts in our healing food section next week. But just a quick overview. Some of the things that walnuts are very good at, they're very beneficial. By eating a handful of walnuts, you can actually increase your brain capacity. I've talked about this when we were on the Big 8:10 a.m., how eating a handful of walnuts a day, they did a study in some of the colleges, and the students actually had their cognitive abilities increase. Their intellect was shown to increase over a period of time by eating walnuts. Walnuts are very good for your heart. There's some research that shows that walnuts also improve the health of your sperm if you're a male. And so walnuts, we'll go into more detail again maybe next week on some of the other benefits of walnuts. Again, like another thing that they do is they help to protect you against prostate cancer. They can help manage your stress and your blood pressure. I mean, it's just they are full of benefits. So again, many people say, well, you know, when we talk about a plant-based diet, where do you get your protein? Where do you get this? Where do you get that? You can't really improve upon the original diet. And so I would highly suggest that you get on a good plant-based diet. The key, though, is to eat a variety of foods, not just eating the same thing every day because the soils have become so depleted. Unless you're eating all organic food, unless you're growing your own food, if you're buying store-bought food, the foods are so depleted that you need to eat a variety of these foods. And you also, in many cases, you may even need to supplement with good, strong, healthy, high-quality supplements. But in general, you may not have to if you're eating all organic or if you're growing your own food. You know, you'd have your own little garden, and you'd be surprised at the amount of food a little small garden can produce. So now we're going to move over. We're going to pivot over into our last segment here where we talk about a healing herb or supplement. And today we're going to talk about in this last 15 minutes or so, we're going to talk a little bit about colloidal silver. And we've talked about it before, but I just wanted to bring some more facts out about it. It is a very, very powerful natural antibiotic. I've used it successfully. And we're going to talk about some of the other benefits, again, of ginger. And sometimes I go back and I talk about some of these things because many times when I talk about them, I don't cover everything that they can do. Sometimes I may talk about it in a program, and I may talk about one thing that it can do or two things that it can do, and I may talk in detail. But there are many, many instances that these supplements can be used. They can be used for different abnormalities and different circumstances. But before we get into talking about these, I just want to point out there was an article that came out on naturalnews.com that talked about, and it was entitled, "The Sales of Herbal and Homeopathic Remedies Top $6.4 Billion. So if you think about it, the sale of homeopathic remedies and of herbal remedies are growing by leaps and bounds because more and more people are coming to the reality that this idea that natural medicine is quackery and whatever else term marketing term that the pharmaceutical industry and some of the other industries have, mainly the pharmaceutical industry, has concocted to destroy any competitors is being seen as is nonsense. And so, but just so before we go into that, just to give you a little background, this particular article, they talked about how it used to be called natural medicine, alternative medicine, but now herbal and homeopathic remedies have gone mainstream. And this is a research done by Mintel, and they indicate that approximately a third of Americans are actually swapping out over-the-counter medicines for natural products to overcome common ailments. And they point out further that wider availability and more holistic, proactive approach to personal health care are key reasons they feel that's behind the trend. We saw retail sales reach an all-time high last year of $6.4 billion, up almost 3%, they pointed out, from 2011. They said not only that, with Americans increasingly likely to suffer from one or more chronic health problems, many of them are starting to take their health into their own hands, which I think is excellent. And so they also point out in this article that the UK is also following suit. They're seeing more schools and colleges opening and opening that's teaching so-called complementary or alternative medicine. And so it is really the people are waking up. And at the end, what they pointed out in this little article, and they said the top three reasons when they ask people why they're using natural medicines, why you're using homeopathic or naturopathic medicine, why are you buying these herbal remedies, the top three reasons they find is that they actually work. And the results are oftentimes very rapid. They're inexpensive, and they're safe. And these are the top reasons that people are given. And even people who get, like they say, in countries like Scotland, where they actually get free drugs, or they pay very low cost for their prescription drug, some of the people still consider these medicines to provide value for the money. Because at the end of the day, most money is not an object to many people if they're suffering, or if their children or their loved ones are suffering. If they have the money, money is not an object. But if you can take something that's less expensive, that works, and that has and does not have all those side effects, why not take it? And so with that background, let's look at some other evidence with regard to colloidal silver. Now, colloidal silver, I've mentioned on here before, and colloidal silver is a very, very powerful antibiotic, natural antibiotic. Actually, it was used by the ancient Phoenicians, and in fact, they understood by keeping water and vinegar, and as well as wine in silver vessels, this maintained its freshness. Not only that, there's a lot of documentation that the ancient Europeans actually used colloidal silver. In other words, silver particles that are suspended in a solution, usually water or some other solution, as an antibacteria of choice. And now there's new research now by scientists at Boston University that shows that silver might even be more powerful than was originally believed, adding silver to antibiotics. Now, it's interesting because in this particular study here that was done at Boston University, this study was not based upon people who were interested really in natural medicine, but they were trying to find a way to cause their antibiotics that are becoming ineffective to prolong their lives, and so, or to make them effective again. And so, in this particular study, and this study was published in the Science Translational Medicine Journal in June of this year, just this month. And it commenced shortly after a well-known doctor in the United Kingdom basically declared that the rise of superbugs could trigger, an apocalyptic scenario in which traditional antibiotics become worthless, resulting in widespread vulnerability against infection. So here you have allopathic medicine, again, going head-to-head with naturopathic medicine. Now, as I always say, allopathic medicine has its role. It has its place, especially in trauma, and there's areas that it has its place. But the problem is that when they try and discount that which they don't understand, or when they try and discount that which they feel may pose a threat to them economically, but they do it at the back and at the expense of everyone else. And so in this particular case, in this particular article, the lead author of the article says, who was Dr. Jim Collins, and rather the co-author of the study, he said, quote, "The number of antibiotic-resistant strains in our hospitals and communities is growing, and is growing dramatically, and has been for some time." He says, "And this development is accompanied by a drop in new antibiotics being developed and approved. We are taking a different approach," he says. "Instead of trying to develop a complementary new antibiotic, we are trying to enhance the ones that we already have." And so what did he do? What he did was he and a team, they took their antibiotics and they began to add small amounts of silver to standard antibiotics. And what they found was this increased their ability of their antibiotics to treat infections by between 10 and 1,000 times. So by adding the silver to their standard antibiotics, it increased the ability or the capacity of these traditional antibiotics up from 10 to 1,000 times. In some cases, the bugs that were beforehand considered untreatable due to the growing antibiotic resistance became treatable all over again. Not only that, based on the study, the silver-laced antibiotics proved to be particularly effective against bugs that cause urinary tract infection and chronic stomach condition. And Dr. Jim Collins, again, a co-author of the study, he pointed out, he says, quote, "This work shows that silver can be used to enhance the action of existing antibiotics against gram-negative bacteria, thus strengthening the antibiotic arsenal for fighting bacterial infections." Now, it's interesting that they would point that out, but here's my question. If silver was so effective and the antibiotics were becoming so ineffective, why not just use the silver? Why mix the chemical antibiotics with the silver? Why not just use the silver that has a long history of being used, and there's some scientific evidence, in fact, there are numerous studies that have shown, for example, that colloidal silver alone can cure MRSA. And not only that, it can also be very effective against candida, and it can also destroy fungi and viruses in your body. So there's no need to bind it with synthetic chemicals. So again, colloidal silver, especially if you're having a cold or flu, I would recommend that you keep it on hand. In fact, I was recently teaching a class on emergency natural medicine, and one of the things that I highly recommend that you have is a first aid kit for natural medicine. And in it, you would have typically all the things that you would have in a normal first aid kit. You would have Band-Aids and gauze and maybe some small emergency tape and scissors, et cetera. But you also would need to have some natural antibiotics and some natural first aid, like cayenne pepper and activated charcoal. And I would say also lobelia, the herb lobelia. And I would also say that you should have colloidal silver on hand. You should have maybe a larger one at home, for emergency first aid kit at home, and maybe a smaller one in your vehicle, or if you have more than one vehicle. But always have some of these things on hand. And so, again, it's very, very important. Colloidal silver is a very, very powerful natural antibiotic. It's been blasted many times by allopathic medicine. Because it can't be patented, and so you can't make hundreds of millions and billions of dollars off of it. But at the end of the day, it works, and it works well, especially when combined with those laws of health that we talk about, namely being trust in the Creator, sunshine, exercise, water, air, rest, diet, and self-control or temperance. Now, in our final supplement we'll talk about, or not really supplement, could be considered a supplement is ginger. And ginger, as we talked about before, again, it has many, 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 many benefits. In fact, some of the research coming out now points out that ginger may actually help increase insulin sensitivity in patients with type 2 diabetes. And this was the result of a finding of a recent study conducted by researchers from the Tabriz University of Medical Sciences in Iran, and it was actually published in the Internal Journal of Food Sciences and Nutrition. And they pointed out that type 2 diabetes, for instance, occurs when the body fails to respond appropriately to the blood sugar regulating hormone, which we call insulin. And in contrast, type 1 diabetes is characterized by the body's failing to produce sufficient insulin to regulate your blood sugar in the first place. But in this particular study that they conducted over in Iran, they found, and they published it again in an International Journal of Food Sciences and Nutrition. It was a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial, and in this study they took 64 people with type 2 diabetes, and they were randomly assigned to take either a placebo or 2 grams, or that's 2,000 milligrams, each day for 2 months of ginger. The researchers found that at the end of the study, patients who had received ginger had significantly higher insulin sensitivity and significantly lower levels of insulin, the LDL, or the bad cholesterol, and as well as triglycerides. So the findings suggest, according to this particular study, that ginger actually might help to reduce secondary complications of type 2 diabetes, and this was the conclusion of the researchers from this university. So again, number one, they were able to show, again, a new study was able to show that ginger for type 2 diabetes can actually be very, very beneficial. The findings also of another study with respect to ginger was very interesting. And it was published from the University of Sydney last year in 2012, and they found that ginger extract actually helps increase cell absorption of glucose, even independent of insulin. So even without the insulin there, they said that ginger can benefit the cells by allowing the cell to uptake the glucose. In other words, the problem with type 2 diabetes is that you have that glucose, or the sugar is not getting inside the cells. It's flowing through the blood, and it's causing problems. And so what this study actually showed was that even without insulin there, the ginger actually helped increase the capacity of the cell to uptake or to assimilate insulin, or rather glucose, I'm sorry. They pointed out, the lead author of this study said, this assists in the management of high levels of blood sugar that create complications for long-term diabetic patients and may allow cells to operate independently of insulin. So the researchers found that the chemicals responsible for this property of ginger are the phenols known as gingerols. Specifically, gingerols increase the distribution of a protein known as GLT, or GLUT4, which actually stimulates your skeletal muscles to uptake more glucose. So interestingly enough, without even insulin, by taking ginger extracts, you can actually increase the capacity of your cells to uptake glucose. The study went on to point out, that the researchers found that chemical response for this property, again, the GLUT4, is a major cause of insulin insensitivity and high blood sugar levels in type 2 diabetics. And the lead author of the study went on to point out, under normal conditions, and I'm quoting him, blood glucose level is strictly maintained within a narrow range, and skeletal muscles is a major site of glucose clearance in the body. Again, there are other benefits for diabetics from ginger, according to a study published in the International Journal of Food and Science and Nutrition in 2011, and they were able to show that ginger extracts can actually provide other important benefits to people with diabetes. The researchers here found that ginger appears to inhibit the action of the enzymes that actually can cause inflammation in the body and lead to all kinds of problems. And there was another study in 2009 in the European Journal of Pharmacology that found that ginger extracts actually reduce blood levels of insulin by approximately 10% and levels of blood sugar by approximately 35%. So if you are a diabetic, or if you are a pre-diabetic, which science tells us 7 million people are, it would be a good idea actually to start looking into maybe taking some ginger. We are out of time. I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. I thank you for joining me here. I'd like to remind you that we're here every Sunday, 4 to 5 p.m. This show is live 99% of the time. Sometimes there's a replay, but it will be a replay every Sunday 4 to 5 p.m. Thank you for listening to Zone Wellness. Remember, if you get to listen from the beginning, the show, the replay will be available at Blog Talk Radio about 10 to 15 minutes after the live broadcast is over. Thank you for listening. Have a blessed day.